I need a car.
A car.
I'm not sure what the message is from the lights, so we're going to ignore that. Let's assume it's not a divine message. I want to begin just with a few words of Hakaras HaTov. First of all, thank you to Lynn, because it's due to her dedication and devotion and hard work and leadership that, first of all, this group has grown from a small group of women sitting at Jessica Robinson's dining room table to the group that is here this evening over the last many years. But really, it's been Lynn's stewardship of Neely that has enabled all of this to grow in many different ways in terms of the programmings that have been taking place over the last year, but also the relationships that have been built both with women in the community and with some of the future women leaders, some of the girls in our community. Having someone to look up to, having someone who is a role model as she is for all of us, is really outstanding, and we're very excited that, please God, for another year, she will be leading us and facilitating so much of learning that we have to share. I think it's really amazing, and I appreciate greatly everybody in this room who came to take the time to learn together tonight. I know it's a very busy time. Because of the way the Yom Tovim fall out, there isn't that much weekday time, so it's Shabbos, Yom Tov, preparing, unpreparing, preparing again, deconstructing, reconstructing. So it's very amazing that everybody came out. And especially many of the people in this room are instrumental in various different capacities in enabling this gathering, enabling everything that Neely does and in everything that the Kol does. So many people in this room play various roles, vital and most of them unsung, unknown, that have enabled us to do everything that we do. And you all know it, and we really, really appreciate it. We couldn't do it without you. And finally, I mentioned this in the past, and it hasn't changed since last year, and that is that, in a certain sense, I very much appreciate the opportunity to prepare and think about tshuva in the weeks prior to this evening. And it's not because I'm an expert in tshuva, I'm not an expert in anything, but I feel for myself, Lev Yodei Maris Nafsho, I feel for myself that I need tshuva probably more than anybody else in this room, or at least we're in the same boat. So everything that we're going to share tonight is self-reflection. It's something that I've thought about. It's an idea, one element of tshuva that I think is important for me to work on, and hopefully it'll be meaning to everyone here in some way. So I want to begin with two strange ways of looking at Yom Kippur, each in their own right strange, and they're more strange when you put them together. I grew up as a child and as a young man, I grew up in a shtibel, which means that the style of davening was a little bit different than what we have in most shuls, what you'll have. That's why at a certain point, my mother decided she was just out of there. She's just going to a regular shul where she can hear and she can see and she can know what's going on. But we had a regular davening with the kind of our own types of Eastern European nigunim. And it was only until I came to a quote-unquote regular shul that I was really astounded when I came to approach the vidui for the first time in a regular shul. I was always taught that vidui, which will turn confession, was supposed to be something very serious. You know, you're talking about all the misdeeds, all the shortcomings, all the failures. So we're taught, halacha says that you're supposed to be bent over and you're supposed to wrap yourself gently. It's very serious. We always did it very quietly. And then I come to a shul and they finish Avla Nachnu V'Avosinu Chatanu, and then they start going, ay, 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 ay. And I'm like, what? And everybody goes together and goes, oh, Shamnu, Bogan. I'm like, do they read the same translation? Are they saying? Do they even know what they're saying over there? We destroyed, like that's what it means. Ashamu, we shamim. We betrayed, and they're going on and on. And then they have a little ayah, so they can even. I'm like, during the ayah, so you're supposed to be like meditating on all of the terrible things. It's like nonstop with the singing, and every time you sing Ashamu, and this is what I get used to. Now in every shul, everywhere I go, they're all singing Ashamu, and I'm thinking to myself, it's the most bizarre thing. Then I spoke to someone, told me it's even more bizarre than in certain Breuers communities, in certain German communities, not in Breuers, but in other Yakisha communities. Not only that, they even sing Al Chait. They go all the way, every Al Chait, they have like a whole upbeat tune. This person was singing for me. I'm like, what? What is going on? I don't understand where it came from. And this whole notion of like being very upbeat and excited, it doesn't make sense to me on Yom Kippur, but it really has a lot of basis in a very strange Mishnah, the Enema Seches Tanis. The Mishnah says, Amar Rav Shimon Gamliel said, Lo hayu yamim tovim li Yisrael kachamisha aser ba'av uchi yom ha-kippurim. There were no happier days on the Jewish calendar than the 15th day of Av and Yom HaKippurim. So already I'm a little bit confused. The Gemara has to explain what the 15th of Av has to do with anything. And Yom Kippur, it's also, I wouldn't associate, like, it's not like, you know, happy birthday, but, alright, the Gemara says it's Mechila Savonos, we have forgiveness. But what happens? What do people used to do in the afternoon of Yom Kippur? So in some shuls, they have a break that's like enough time to, you know, run out, get some air and come back in. Others, they have a longer break. Shebehen benos Yerushalayim yotzos b'chlei lavan. The girls would go out to the field. Yotzos v'cholos b'krumim. They would go out and they would dance. It was a shidduch party. What are you looking for, young man? So could you imagine on Yom Kippur afternoon when everybody gets out of shul, all of the girls will go home, everybody gets dressed up in their finest if they weren't wearing it already, and then they would go out to the park, and all the guys would come from the shul, they would all go to the park, everybody would have a big hanging out in the middle of Yom Kippur in the afternoon. Did you ever think about that? What does that have to do with Yom Kippur? Why are we so happy and we're having a shidduch party? It's like, I don't really understand it. But then there's another side of it, which is also very difficult to grasp. So we're dealing with tshuva, we're dealing with Yom Kippur. So imagine how we're supposed to feel when we think about tshuva. Imagine, let's say you have a real estate developer. He's a very, very, very successful real estate developer. And he has a builder who he works with. And this real estate magnate is a multi-billionaire. And the builder is very appreciative of the fact that he works with this developer because he has all kinds of projects and is constantly busy with different pieces of work. And one day, the magnate says to him, he says, I'd like you to focus on one project right now. I'm looking for a house for myself. So here's what I'd like you to do. And he sits down with a list. He takes out a piece of paper and he writes down on this piece of paper for the builder exactly the specifications of what he wants in this house. He wants the specific flooring. Not just wood flooring, he wants mahogany wood flooring that's shined with a specific shellac that you can get in a specific store. And then he goes on to the beams. And he says, I really would like these exact beams with exact height of the ceiling. And he tells him every single detail. And then he says the paint. You know, you can't just go to any paint store. I want this specific quality paint. You know, this brand. I want this specific type, this texture. And he goes, he sits there for like 3 hours with the builder, telling him exactly what he wants. And every item is of the top quality. It's the most sophisticated. It's the best, the most durable material. And the design is mamish, like off the charts. So the builder goes home. So initially he's like, you know what? Looks good. I can do this. And then for some reason the next day he finds himself with his DVR. And you know, he gets busy watching reruns of a Chavez. I don't know exactly what he was watching reruns of. He feels a little bit lazy. He says, you know what the truth is? I know he gave me such and such a deadline. The project has to be done. But the truth is, we could get away with it. The floors don't have to be mahogany. Because if they have to be mahogany, I have to go all the way to a specific lumber yard, at face who knows where in Wisconsin, to get that exact wood. And you know, I can just go right here to Lowe's or to Home Depot. I can get wood. It'll be fine. And then he starts looking at the beams. Man, that beam, do you know where I'm going to have to go? How much I'm going to have to be matriach myself to get that beam? You know what? I can get another joist. It's not, it won't be, you know, I can get one from around the corner. I have a cheap guy who will do the work, no problem. Now, maybe it's not going to be the most durable, the most outstanding craftsmanship ever, but you know what? The truth is, it's fine. The kachava, and so it was, that each and every item on the list, he basically shortchanged each one of the items. The workmanship was pretty weak, and the effort was mediocre at best. And the building, maybe on the outside it looked okay, but the builder knew that on the inside it wasn't exactly his best work. But that's what he had to show for himself. So comes the day that he's ready to hand over the keys. He's got the building all complete. He's ready to go. And he comes over to the door and knocks on the door of the office of his good friend, his supporter, the real estate developer. He knocks on the door. The real estate developer opens the door and he says, "You're finished? I've been looking forward to this." So the builder says, "Yeah, I'm finished. It's going to be great. You're going to love it. I know you've been too busy to check it out, but wait, you'll see it. You'll be really happy." So the real estate developer takes the keys from him, and he looks him in the eye, and he says, "You know what? I have to tell you the truth. The house is not for me. It's for you." Now the builder is... We think that the whole year the Rabbeinu Shalom gave us a big list and it's to do him a favor. At the end of the year, whatever we have to show, the keys are ours. Whatever we built, whatever we did, whatever we said, that's what we have to show for it. So what does that feel like? That feels terrible. Think about that. And we pile it on Yom Kippur when we really drill down into this theme of how difficult things are. I have this pamphlet for many years. This is a Vidui pamphlet. Some of you may have seen it. It was published like 500 times since 1975. It's a little pamphlet. You can stick it in your sitter. Oh, man. By the time you're finished with this, you are really finished. Every single Ashamnu and every Alchait, so just so that there's no ambiguity, you think you're reading it in the Hebrew, you don't know what you're saying, you get this, you know exactly what you did over the last year. So there's 22 Ashamnus, I'm doing the math, and then there's another 44 Alchaits, and then that, you do it, you know, how many times over the course of Mincha and Erev Yom Kippur, and then on the night of Yom Kippur, and then in the day, and then the afternoon, Mincha, you're not finished, you go one more time to Eil, just one more Ashamnu. Think of all the numbers of the Ashamnus. It's overwhelming. It's the amount of Ashamnus. They point out here that when we talk about our speech alone, we acknowledge 194 times that we made a mistake, that we came up short. So how do we feel about that? We feel terrible. The Chayyadim goes further. You thought we were done. The Chayyadim points out that the Gemara says the best thing is really to write out a list by yourself of all the things that we know that we did. Now, if we started now, we would hopefully finish by Yom Kippur. So the Chayyadim says, "I'll do you a favor. Don't worry. I'm going to organize everything according to the Aleph Beis." So in the back of the Chayyadim, they give you an Aleph Beis listing of all the different Averos that are possibly under the letter Aleph, and then the letter Beis, and then the letter Gimel, all the way down to the letter Tav. You're not, it's just like unbelievable. So by the time you finished with all of your Ashamnus and all of your Alchaids, you feel mamish like lint off the carpet. So comes Rav Shlomo Volbi, the great Mashkiach from Yerushalayim, and he says, "When we come to Yom Harom, you know how we should feel? Navo niskonana b'li yiyush, b'li atzvus. We shouldn't be sad." Shouldn't be sad? We're crushed. We're so broken, we're so downtrodden. If we're really in it, if we really think about what it means, if we really understand the significance and the gravity of it, So then, how can we not be broken? So, Kachava, there's a psychologist in New York. His name is Dr. Ben-Zion Sorotskin. So he reports that there was a mashgiach in a certain nearby yeshiva that some of his talmidim wish that they could go into a coma on Rosh Hashanah or starting earlier on Rosh Chodesh Elul and not wake up until Sukkot because of the overwhelming anxiety that they have. And he has an entire paper dedicated to the anxiety that is induced by this time of year. And maybe that's right. Maybe that's how we should look at it. So I don't know what to do with this. On the one hand, we're singing of Shamnu. On the other hand, we're looking at anxiety that's induced to the point where it's crippling. So is that what it's supposed to look like? Is that how we're supposed to approach Yom Kippurim? So this evening we can share one point, one idea, one theme. Just one insight. And the development of this insight came from a very prominent psychologist, a PhD, who is an expert in this area of life, of psychology. And I met him a few weeks ago, because after Tisha B'Av, the Kol Ha'Hes Bein Hazmanim, so I took my bicycle and I went east, and then eventually you hit Lake Michigan. So I had a blanket and I had this book, courtesy of my mother-in-law, like most books that I have referenced. And it really totally changed my understanding of tshuva, the role of tshuva, and the premise of tshuva. And we can frame it in two stories. Imagine you have a third grade child. The third grade child comes home to his parents, and the child says, I have a test that I took in school today. And the parents say, really? So how'd it go? The child said, well, there were 20 questions on the test, and I only got 3 of them right. So the parents, not sure what to make of it. The parents pick up the test, they look at the test, and they see that it's an exam from the 8th grade. And they say to the child, this test is not for you, this test is for an 8th grader. The fact that you got a 3, it's because you got 3 right out of an 8th grade exam. Or, in a slightly different way, imagine we were to visit a hospital, and we saw 2 different patients. We saw one patient that was in a room, and it was very quiet. And the patient was resting. It was a machine, but it was very quiet. And the doctors and nurses were passing by, and there were some files, some deep, deep files in that patient's little bay. And then you go down the hall, and you see another patient, and you see doctors are coming and going, and nurses are coming and going. Lo, Elena, we should never know from either. And you see they're talking and they're busy and they're coming and they're going and the carts, they have these carts with stacks of things and medicines and injections and people are yelling and talking and there's monitors, there's beeping. And you say, wow, I feel so bad for the poor patient who's getting yelled at by the nurses. I don't even know if the nurses are yelling at the doctors are yelling at the nurses and everybody's running and they're busy and they're doing. So the visitor comes, you come to the nurse's station, you say, well, you know, I feel so terrible. You see that patient down there, there's so much crazy activity going on in that room. And over here, this patient, you know, it's very quiet. And someone looks up from the nursing station and says, you know, it's because this patient is going to hospice, Lo, Elena. And the other patient, they're working on him to get him home. Tshuva is a challenge, but the premise of tshuva, the premise of the whole process, is that we can do it, and that there's hope for us. The underlying message of tshuva itself is to believe that we can accomplish it. There is an unbelievable line, a life-changing line that appears in the works of Reb Tzadok HaKohen of Lublin. Reb Tzadok has a line that Tzidkas Tzadik, It's a life-changing line. And we need to remember this line for the rest of our lives. Says the Holy Reb Tzadok HaKohen, Kishem shitzarech adam laha'amin b'Hashem yisbarach. Just like a person has to believe in God, kach tzarech achar kach laha'amin ba'atzmo. A person has to believe in themselves. Ratzalomar, that means to say, Sheyesh l'Hashem yisbarach esek imo v'she'enenu poel batal shebin layla hayav im layla avar. It means that God cares about us. He's involved in us. He pays attention to us. And we're not some fleeting cloud. Some non-existent worker that was existent and then is gone. Like the animals of the field, he says. Rak tzorich lahamin ki nafshu mi makor ha-chaim yizbarach shemo v'ashem yizbarach mis'anig u'mishtashe abo kisha'osis ritzono. We have to believe that we are worthy. That the Rebbe Shel Olam, when we're third graders, doesn't give us tests from eighth graders. He pays attention to us. He wants to take care of us because he believes that we can do it. The Ramban says, in the beginning of the story of the Akedah, Elokim Nisar es Avram, the purpose of a challenge is L'tovas HaMenusa. Lo Aleinu, we should never have challenges, and many people have different kinds of challenges in their lives. But tshuva is a challenge. The purpose of tshuva is not to disempower us. It's not to beat us down. It's not to make us believe that we're worthless. And this is what I learned sitting on the grass in Burnham Park in Evanston, overlooking Lake Michigan. Because the Gaon of self-esteem, his name is Nathaniel Brandon, he wrote like 6 books on self-esteem. The book that I was using is called The 6 Pillars of Self-Esteem, but he has a whole bunch. He says something unbelievable that I never realized, and really this is the core. He says, what is self-esteem? Parenthetically, it doesn't mean, well, we go figure out what it does not mean based on what it does mean. Self-esteem is the experience of being competent to cope with the basic challenges of life and of being worthy of happiness. It consists of 2 components, he says. Number 1, self-efficacy. We're confident in our ability to think, learn, choose, and make appropriate decisions. Number 2, self-respect. Or confidence in our right to be happy and in the belief that achievement, success, friendship, respect, love, and fulfillment are appropriate to us. I realize that self-esteem is the yesod of tshuva. And it's so important. We cannot understate this. There is a very prominent psychiatrist, probably one of the most prominent psychiatrists in America today. He founded a rehabilitation center for substance abuse and other terrible illnesses in Pittsburgh called Gateways. Now he's retired, he's an octogenarian. He's an unbelievable, righteous, tzaddik, and an incredible practitioner, in addition to an unending author, seems like. He's authored now over 60 books. His name is Rabbi Dr. Abraham J. Twersky. So Dr. Twersky, by day, is a psychiatrist, but by night, he's a Chassidish Rebbe, and then between those two, he's writing all kinds of books. So he's written over 50 books. And in one of his books, he writes, and then you can go and you can watch this talk that he gave it, it's on YouTube, it's very easily accessible, it's not a long talk, and it's very personal. He says that all of his 50 books are all essentially about one thing. Just using different language. All of his books are all about self-esteem. Just some of them are couched in Chumash, and some of them are couched in Pirkei Avos, and some of them are just about self-esteem. He has 4 or 5 books just about self-esteem. And he talks about, not from a Torah standpoint, from a clinical standpoint, This is a book he wrote years ago. This one is published in 1997, but he has a few more on this topic and a few since, called Life's Too Short. Pull the plug on self-defeating behavior and turn on the power of self-esteem. Abraham Twersky, MD. Not Hasidic rabbi, which is also a great gaonis. But he says that he talks about his own struggles with self-esteem. And he talks about in this book the impact of self-esteem that it has on a person and the effects that it can have on us. He talks about narcissism and how people with low self-esteem who don't believe in their own self-efficacy and their own self-respect, they very often become extremely self-absorbed. And others, Rahman al-Itzlan, he talks about become depressed or even turn to substance abuse. And in each element here, he has a whole chapter, a whole section, understanding the problems of low self-esteem, codependence, hypersensitivity. Each one of these is a whole chapter. The fear of rejection. He talks, each one is a case study or two of people who he treated. Talks about a person who came to see him, a man, he calls him Ralph. A string of unsuccessful relationships. And after a period of treatment, it became evident that he had a terrible problem of low self-esteem. So he couldn't imagine that anybody else would want to spend any time with him. So Taka, they didn't. If my self-image is negative and I'm convinced that others see me negatively, this poses a serious problem for me. Why would anyone deserve my companionship? Since it is obvious to me that no one would wish to be in my presence, any effort I make to associate with people will inevitably result in their rejecting me. So why bother trying to forge relationships if I know they're not going to go anywhere? Why should I try to reach out to the Ribono Shel Olam, who is always looking to listen to me, is there for me? Why should I make myself vulnerable and open up to the Ribono Shel Olam if I'm really not worthy of anything anyway? So it's just a waste of time. My teacher, Dr. David Pelkovitz, has a lot of different discussions about this topic. One interesting aspect he talks about has to do with perseverance. People, unfortunately, have low self-esteem, give up very easily. They have a much lower threshold of perseverance because, obviously I'm just not good at this. I don't have the ability to cope with challenges. Doesn't mean that we can conquer every single challenge that comes our way. But the drop-off rate, the impact in terms of perseverance in a person's life is so strong, and it could be crippling. So I met this sefer many years ago. The sefer is called Ashiv Mimbitsulos, and it's a very interesting book. I don't know if you can get this in America. Ashiv Mimbitsulos literally means I will bring back from the depths. And it's written by a very prominent teacher in Israel, a high school rebbe, written for adolescent boys. It's written for adolescent boys, and when I picked up this sefer, this was authored in Tufshin Samach Dalad, which means it was over 10 years ago. I'm not sure how thick this volume would be if it was written today, because of the close to insurmountable challenges that the world that we live in today presents for adolescent young men and men in general. Al naftulei hanefesh v'noam hatshuva be'inyanei kedusha sabris. The sefer is written for boys in high school age, because that's who he deals with, who have gotten themselves ensnared in a place that they know they don't want to be. They're ashamed of themselves. But the problem is, he says, is that after they've gotten into this unfortunate and vicious cycle, they can't seem to find a way out of it. Because there is the Nachash HaKadmon, the first snake that came to Adam HaRishon, and said to him, Adam Rishon, you know what you did? You're hopeless. When God came to Adam Rishon and said to him, you know, what happened? The snake said to him in his ear, don't bother. You're hopeless. You have no future. Just give up. He says, you're ashamed and you're alone and you're hopeless. So what are many young people struggling with? Exactly this problem. So he writes a whole sefer devoted to this issue of not giving up on ourselves. And it doesn't matter where we've been or where we've gone. He quotes from a teaching of Rav Nachman Mibreslov. Says the holy Rav Nachman, Im ata ma'amin sheyecholim lekalkel, if you believe that you could break it, that you can mess it up, ta'amin sheyecholim letaken. You have to believe that you can fix it. And it's not something far out, it's not something that you can't do. It's possible. It's within your reach. The pasuk says in Parshas Nitzavim, Ki ha-mitzvah azos asher anochi mitzavcha yom lo neflesi mimcha. This mitzvah that I'm giving to you, it's right near you. Says the Ramban, ha-mitzvah azos al ha-tshuva niskeres from v'hashivosa el levavecha. The mitzvah of tshuva, it's right there. We can do it. It's a strange story, but it's possible. Imagine some single woman is sitting at a cafeteria table, and a man walks up to her, and the problem is that this man is known to be a gangster. He's known to be one of the most wicked, nefarious criminals in the neighborhood. For some reason, they're sitting at a cafeteria table together, and he says to her, he pulls out a ring from his pocket, and he says, Harei am mekudesh asli al menasha ani tzadik. You should be married to me on the condition that I am a tzaddik. And the woman says to herself, I'll take the money. There's no way I'm married to him. He's a Rasha Gomor. He's a total Rasha. The Gemara says, don't take it. Mekudeshes. Rashi says, we're not sure that they're married. Why are we not sure? We know the man is a criminal. Shema hira tshuva belibo bedaito. Maybe he thought to fix things. We think that it's so difficult, it's so insurmountable. By the time the al-chaits are poured on and piled on, we think that we're mamish nothing and there's no hope and it's so high. It's not so. A person can turn it around. But it's even more than that, because in our generation, it's even different than it was in previous generations. And I'm not one to say that. Who am I? I'm a nobody. But there was a great Hasidic master. His name is Reb Shlomo HaKohen Rabinowitz, the Teferet Shlomo. The Holy Teferet Shlomo says something mamish shocking. And he's living in the middle of the 19th century. He's not living in 2015. He says in the Pasuk in Parshas Akev, the word Akev means the heel, means the low part, the bottom. Akev Tishmu, and at the end of days, which is what we're period that we're in right now, people are going to be dealing with just trying to scrape by the bottom. And he says something unbelievable. He says, we should know. L'kol adam l'havin l'das. Everybody should know. Because in the darkness of this galus, yakar ma'od l'fnei Hashem yizbarach u'mekubal l'fanav, kol b'chinas hisoris l'avod l'toro l'tfila. God appreciates. He thinks it's precious any attempt that we do, any steps that we'll make. Afilu she'ino karoyu v'kavana gedola k'mo b'doros harishonim. Even if it's not as great as what came before us, we look at people who did tshuva before us, we look at our parents, our grandparents, great rabbis, unbelievable mentors, we read these stories and we're like, even my greatest tshuva, even my best Shmon Esrei ever, it's nothing compared to what they accomplished. He says, B'chol zos hama'at me'avudas me'avdus hu chashav le'aknosh baruch hu. Our little bit of davening, it's like, who am I to say? But the Holy Teferet Shlomo says it. It's like the Vilna Gaon saying Shmon Esrei. My Shmon Esrei? By the time I finish Shmon Esrei, I already figured out what I'm having for lunch, what I need to do when I get into the car, who I need to call,
the 14 things that I forgot to do on my way to Shacharis. But apparently that's good. That's good, says the Holy Tiferet Shlomo. Because all hagolas v'koshal koach hasevel meirov atzaras v'tirdos hasman v'tisitra ach v'rodif kol hayom be'im enos. We are pursued all the time. We're pursued all the time by our cell phones, by our email, by phone calls, by the pressures of life, which are, you know, this was a man, Herb Tzadok HaKohen, he was living at a time, you know, where the biggest excitement in the neighborhood when would be, I don't know, a four-horse chariot would come rather than two horses. You know, that's the biggest thing that was going on in Galicia at that time. Seriously. And what would he say about today? Ki azman gorim, he says, the time is different. So we feel disempowered because we look at the process of tshuva and we say, oh my gosh, it's impossible. But Tiferet Shlomo says, we can do it. Because the little that we do matters so much. Because look at the challenges that we face. We need to remind ourselves of this self-esteem, that we can do it. But it's not just that tshuva presupposes self-esteem. This introspection actually builds us. Dr. Pelkas likes the quote from this study about neurosurgeons. They did a whole study on neurosurgeons. What's the distinction between the best top neurosurgeons and the rest of the bunch? So unfortunately, in the business of neurosurgery, not every time is it a successful surgery. So every neurosurgeon, no aleinu, leaves some patients on the table who go to the next world. So what they found in the research was that the difference between the top 1% of neurosurgeons and the rest of the neurosurgeons is that after the top 1% of the neurosurgeons had a patient who went to the other world, you know what they did? These neurosurgeons went back to the case. They went back to the nurses and to their instruments and to their processes and to their preparation. And they analyzed every step. Where did it go? Where did it go right? And where did it go wrong? And through that process of introspection, that was what enabled them to sharpen their skills. That's what enabled them to become the top 1% of neurosurgeons. And because of that, over the course of a lifetime, they're saving hundreds and maybe thousands of lives. But it's because when a person, lo aleinu, didn't make it in their surgery, they didn't go back and say, first of all, they didn't say, oh, you know, I'm a disaster. I really should go into carpentry. They didn't say that. And they didn't say, oh, it's not my fault. What do I need? You know, obviously the lighting was bad. And obviously the instruments were bad. Obviously somebody else did something wrong. I'm going to move on to my next case. They said, I'm capable of this. I know I can do this. I know I'm not perfect, but I know I can do this. And I want to know what I did wrong, what went wrong, so I can learn for next time. It's a totally different kind of attitude, and it creates a totally different result. And maybe that's why, perhaps, there are two tshuvas. We're all going to do tshuva this Yom Kippur. But what kind of tshuva are we going to do? How can we have a tshuva discussion without the Rambam? The Rambam, in his epic work, in Hilchos Tshuva, he begins the work, of course, the beginning of the first of the 10 chapters, that there is a mitzvah to do tshuva. Sheyoshev hachote mecheto lofnei Hashem v'yisvadeh. This is the koter, this is the introduction, the headline. There is a mitzvah to do tshuva. And in the first chapter, the Rambam gives you the framework for tshuva, the concept of vidui, and how it works in the Beis HaMikdash. Then in the second chapter, the Rambam tells you, Ezoi tshuva gemura, umahi tshuva. What is tshuva? So the Rambam tells us the very well-known steps for the Rambam. First of all, you have to have remorse. You have to stop doing what you're doing. Then you have to affirm. You have to resolve not to do it anymore. And you have to verbalize it. Those are the Rambam's four steps. Not exactly in that order, discussion the Rishonim, but those are the four key ingredients. So the Rambam then goes on to tell you how a person who does tshuva operates, and you should view yourself always in the middle. And then, Perakei, the Rambam has a dive, kind of like a tangent, a diversion to a different topic. After the Rambam talks about things that are impediment to tshuva, the Rambam says, "Rishus kol adam nesunalo," and he spends two chapters talking about the concept of bechira chafshis, about the importance of understanding free will, and that Jews do not believe in determinism. And he goes on and on. He quotes verses and halachos right in the middle of Hilchos Tshuva. The importance of understanding that we have free will. Then the Rambam in Perek Zayin, in the seventh chapter, says the following: Hoel urishus kol adam nesuna lo kamosha biyarnu. Since everybody has free choice how they want to live their lives, yishtadel ha'adam lasos tshuva. A person should work hard to do tshuva. And then he talks about a person should see as if he's half this and he's almost going to die and he has to repent. But I don't understand. The Rambam already told me this. The Rambam already told me in Perek Beis and Perek Gimel the frame of tshuva and the process of tshuva and the importance of tshuva. So why did he tell me about the? It's like in the middle of nowhere, he's got two chapters on what should have been in the Guide for the Perplexed, a philosophical topic about Bechira Chavshis, that we have free choice. And then he has to recapitulate again in Perek Zayin how great Tshuva is. And in Halacha Zayin he says, it's amazing. Yesterday I was a nobody. I was far away from God. And today I did Tshuva and now I'm right back. But maybe that's the point. The first Tshuva is Tshuva of the average, ordinary Tshuva. We have the book. It says what to do, so we say what we're supposed to do, we do it, and we close the book, and that's it. But we don't really believe it's for us. So the Rambam says, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to give you two chapters in the middle that's going to change your whole experience of tshuva. It's a different kind of tshuva. It's the tshuva of self-esteem. It's the tshuva that exists when a person believes in themselves. Believes in themselves to the point that everybody has the capacity, the Rambam says, even to be as great as Moshe Rabbeinu. That's unbelievable. I'm not sure that Nathaniel Brandon even realized that we have the capacity to be like Moshe Rabbeinu. It doesn't mean that we are going to be Moshe Rabbeinu. It doesn't mean we have to look like Moshe Rabbeinu. But we have the ability to accomplish something. And once you believe that, if you believe in yourself, then your tshuva is a different tshuva. Now, yishtadel ha'adam lasos tshuva. Now we really need to work hard. And now we have a much different approach, we have a much more balanced approach to understanding the process of tshuva. We talked about the Rambam's requirement for verbalizing, for vidui. That's what we're going to do with all the al-chaits and all the al-shamnus. It's essential, the Rambam says, to articulate it verbally. If you miss that, some say you miss the mitzvah. So that word vidui, that's one of those like seriously loaded words. Right? That's what this packet is called. Vidui. Right? There are fewer things that are more intense than you could talk about is vidui. I don't know why. There was a certain organization that once sent out a mailing. We got a mailing. Maybe I shouldn't make light of it. Making light of it just in this context. For some reason, we got a mailing. You know, people send out all kinds of things in the mail. We got a mailing with a card for vidui at the end of life. I open the mail. I'm like, what are you trying to say? It's the mamish like, vidui liyom amisa. If a person happens to be near death, they need this card. Like, what? Like, you can send me, like, a Korin mat, you know, from the... You can send me a bookmark. You're not going to send me, like, a card that says when you're in the precipice of death at 120 years old, so you got this in the mail, and please send us a check. Don't forget. Like, Vidui is the most... It's like, the mom is the most serious thing ever. You don't send that in the mail. Seriously. So, like, so here is the pamphlet of the Vidui, and you see a person is standing like this, you know, he's very serious. So vidui is confession. And on a serious note, that's what the Rambam says in Perek Zayin. That a person needs to do tshuva as if, who knows, we never know. You know, if there's one thing If there's one thing that we sense when we read Nisan HaTokef, we sense that vulnerability. So it's a serious thing, Vidui. Vidui is confession. Vidui is talking about the things that you did wrong, that I did wrong, that we did wrong. And yet, the halacha says that Vidui is also something else. We mentioned this at the Kollel Summer event at the History Museum. It's called Vidui Maser. The beginning of Parshas Kisavah, the Torah tells us that at the end of the third and the sixth years, you have to give specific tithes every year. You either give it to the poor or you bring it to the Yerushalayim, to the Beis HaMikdash, etc., whatever you do. So at the end of those years, you have to make a declaration. And you know what you declare? You declare that I did what I was supposed to. I didn't eat it while I was tameh. I didn't eat it, God forbid, when a person was an onan, when a close relative had died. I didn't throw it in the trash. I disposed of it properly. All the things that I did. I did it, I did it, I did it, I did it. Amazing. And the Mishnah says in Masers, that's called Vidui Maser. Could you imagine somebody walks in on the night of Yom Kippur and they're like, I did it right, I did it right, I did it right. It's like in the wrong place. But it's not. Because I once heard in the Meir of Soloveitchik that that's what Vidui is. Vidui is taking an accounting. Proper self-esteem means, this is what he develops, Dr. Brandon, is an accurate, and this is what Dr. Torsky also talks about, it's an accurate understanding of who you are. And that means Vidui has to be about the things that we didn't do, and also the things that we did do right. Because if we spend all the time saying that we are nothing and we are nobody and we are Ephes, so then we might miss out on the premise of tshuva. We're a kli mole busha. We come to the Boshom, we're going to say on Yom Kippur. We're a vessel full of embarrassment. So you know what we got to do? We got to empty out the embarrassment and fill it up with something else. Don't throw out the vessel. Don't break it. Fill it with something better. Vidui is not just all the bad things. Vidui is also the good. So now perhaps we can come back to the beginning. Maybe this is why we're singing Hashanu. On the one hand, we sing Hashanu, maybe on one level, and this is the story that Shai Agno tells from the Baal Shem Tov. The Baal Shem Tov once came to a davening on Yom Menorah in some hamlet somewhere, and they said, oh, the chazan here is very unusual because he sings all the Hashamnus. The Baal Shem Tov says, ah, that's so beautiful. So beautiful that he sings all the Hashamnus. You know why? He says, because the first day on the job, when the king hires his new janitorial staff for the year, when that guy, when he comes in and he takes the plastic bags out of the receptacles with the garbage and he takes them and he throws them out, he's singing. He's having the best time because he loves what he does. So that's one reason to sing the Hashamnus, because thank God we're getting rid of all of that stuff. But the other reason we sing Hashamnu is because the fact that we are taking stock of ourselves presupposes that we have the ability to do it. Otherwise, why would we go through the process? If it was all for naught, if we weren't believing in ourselves, if we didn't have self-esteem, then we would say, oh, it's just a waste of time. And we would really be taka very down. But we're not, we're up. We're up because we believe in ourselves. We believe that we're the patient who's getting the treatment. Yom Kippur treatment is not easy. It's not fun looking ourselves in the mirror. But we're getting that treatment because tomorrow we're getting out of here and we're going to go build a life for ourselves. We're going to be, please God, Nechtav L'chaim and Nechtam L'chaim. So we say Hashamnu because it says, you know what? I believe in myself that even though I did A, B, C, and D and all the Hashamnus are really bad, but you know what? That's okay because I have self-esteem. I believe in the Rabbonu Shalom. I believe in Schar V'Onesh. I'm going to pay the price for those things, but I'm going to do tshuva on them, and I'm going to be Tzarech L'Hamin Ba'atzmo. I believe in myself. And perhaps we can wonder if maybe that's why Yom Kippur was an amazing day to have girls and boys go out and find a shidduch. Because sometimes in relationships, and I don't know anything about relationships at all, but I've heard this from Dr. Polkovitz, and you'll find it in Dr. Tversky. People struggle in relationships dafka because they struggle with their own self-esteem. You know, so you have a young person who's sitting in shul and they're beating themselves all up all day, or their whole life they're beating themselves up, or someone's beating them up. So when they go to look to find somebody, every time they look in the mirror, they see someone who's been beat up. But now if we understand tshuva in this way, how do we walk away from Yom Kippur? We don't walk away beat down. We feel like we invested in ourselves. Laham in ba'atzmo. God believes in me, so I believe in me. So you know what? I can find love somewhere else too. There's no happier day than that. There's no happier day than when we can find the belief in ourselves, because we can remember that the Ribbono Shel Olam believes in us. If we walk away from Yom Kippur and we feel like dead meat, so then maybe we're a little out of balance. Dr. Tversky talks about how self-esteem is a lifetime of work for many people. It's not going to be in one Yom Kippur. But it's got to be a process. So how do we feel about those chataim? It's not that the chataim, the things that we did, the shortcomings, they define me and that's who I am and how horrible I am. No. It's not that I'm a terrible person and that's what I associate myself with. You know what? After Yom Kippur, I realized because I have a high level of self-esteem through the process of tshuva, those things, they're beneath me. I say al chait, not because I think that I'm terrible, but because I have emuna in myself and I say, I can't even believe that I would do that. Someone who God believes in, who I think is important, that's me. I would do that. I can't even recognize that. It's crazy. I could do better than that. Because the Ribbono Shel Olam believes in me. Perhaps this is the avodah of tshuva, of this Yom Kippur, for me, for us, for anyone, is to build the emuna in ourselves. And think about the impact that can have, how we view ourselves. Because now all of a sudden we open up the doors really wide. Because until now, when we've defined ourselves in a negative way, so our potential is very limited. It's very constricted because, you know, who am I? What am I? But now if I shift and I understand the Ribbono Shel Olam believes in me, I believe in myself, I can dream big. I'm worthy of that. I can aspire to that. And to every person, that's something else. But I'm worthy of dreaming big. I'm worthy of aspiring to something greater. So there is a story of a young woman. She is a college graduate. And she lives in a small town. And in this town, there's a big corporation, and this corporation is the business in the town. And the town has, you know, a few gas stations, and it has a library, and, you know, it has one of those Main Street signs. And just off of Main Street, so they have one bar, one tavern. And this young woman, for whatever reason, she can't help herself. However she got into this place, she finds herself very often at this tavern. She finds herself at this bar. And the problem is, once she walks in the door, lo aleinu, och and vey, how she walks out. So her mother sometimes, her parents, they'll drive by on a Friday night, and they'll see outside, it's like a series of pickup trucks, and there's their daughter throwing up on the guardrail, all over herself, tattered clothing, hair completely disheveled. Looks like a wreck. And this goes on for a period of time. And the next morning, she doesn't know where she was and what she did, and who knows what was going on with her. So her mother finally says to her, you know what? It has nothing to do with, she's not talking about this at all. One morning on a Tuesday, they go for coffee. She says, you know, now that you're out of college, what's your plan? Are you thinking about a position? She says, well, you know, maybe I'll go work in some local store. And Leonard says, no, you're very talented. You know, I saw there was an ad, there was a classified for the big corporation in the town that they're looking for someone with a certain set of marketable skills. And it seemed like a very strong position, and it seems like something that you could be good at. So the young woman says, I don't know, but you know what? I don't have anything else right now. I might as well check it out. So the woman goes and she interviews. And lo and behold, she receives the position. And not only is it Stama position, it's a very prestigious position. And in this position, in the company, they offer her a uniform. So every day she comes, and she has this very specific uniform that she wears with the insignia of the company and her name on the other side and exactly her rank in the company. She knows because there's just a little something on the cuff of her sleeve of this jacket that she has to wear every day when she comes into the office. So she's working at this job. She gets the job on Wednesday. And Friday night, she's driving home from work. And of course, like every Friday night, she pulls right into the bar, into the parking lot. And she pulls her same car right next to the same pickup trucks that were there last Friday night, and the Friday night before that, and the Friday night before that. And she's about to get out of the car. She turns off the ignition. She puts the keys in her pocket. She's about to hold on to the handle to open the door. And she looks at her sleeve when she opens the door, and she sees that little insignia from the company on the side of her sleeve. And then she looks at her uniform, she looks at her jacket, her blazer that she's wearing, and she sees the logo, and she sees her name. And she sees her jacket and who she is. And then in her mind's eye, she looks out the window, and she sees the guardrail with a young woman covered in vomit. She says to herself in her mind, she says, that's beneath me. She puts the car in reverse and she drives off. What she doesn't see is that across the street, in another car, is her mother and her father, who have been waiting there for 3 hours to see if her car would pull into this parking lot. And when they see the car and the bright lights go on and she puts the car in reverse, her mother starts to cry. Her father starts to cry and they give each other a big hug. They've never felt so much joy in their whole life. When we don our finest on Yom Kippur, dear friends, we remember, we're going to say Hashamnu, but we remember that this uniform is the uniform of Avinu Malkeinu. That means that we are princes and princesses. And that can never be taken away from us. And so the things that we're going to say in that whole litany of Al-Chaitz and Hashamnus, they're just beneath us. May we be blessed that this year we will be Nechtam L'chaim. We will be blessed with a great year in all aspects of Ruchnius and Gashmius, and we will take with us the message, the premise of tshuva, the idea of self-esteem, to build an incredible year for ourselves in our relationship with Hashem. Gemar Tov. If anybody would like, inside the envelopes you have little cards, you can take them with you. We didn't do bookmarks this year, but I don't know if we even have enough cards, Baruch Hashem. But you're more than welcome to take. Shana Tovah.